Welcome to the Philharmonia Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:42 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 28th. Well, today's been a generally firm tone right across stock markets, and that's at least in part due to the fact that the oil price was a bit weaker in here today. It was down by almost a full dollar and is currently sitting around $97 on that West Texas Intermediate. Risk assets generally were a bit firmer in here today, and starting out in Asia, the Hang Seng was stronger by 1.4%, Nikkei by just under 1%, and a pretty similar story for the Shanghai A shares. Today was also the announcement of the Indian budget, and the market rallied initially on that news, but wasn't able to sustain the upward dynamic and actually closed pretty unchanged on the day. So while there are definitely positive aspects to the budget, the inflationary pressures that are still extant in the global economy are of a particular focus to India. And while I think there's an increasing likelihood that the market is building a medium-term low in this area, it needs to start to sustain upward dynamics to really start to lend confidence to that supposition. In Europe's markets in here today, the majority were in positive territory. The DAX, the Swiss market, and the Swedish market were all stronger by over 1%, and the FTSE was down marginally on the day, probably led lower by both HSBC and Standard Chartered. HSBC missed its what it was expected to announce on its earnings. And they cited the fact that costs were rising, and particularly that they're now paying bankers more in Asia than they are in London. And if that's not an indication of where the action is in the global economy, I don't think anything else is either. As we approach the close on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is stronger by almost 0.75%, and the Nasdaq is just in negative territory. Canada also announced today that it was growing by about 3.3%, so it can't be too far off that they begin to start to raise interest rates in Canada, and that certainly helped the Canadian dollar to push ahead in here today, and it was stronger against the US dollar by about a half of 1 cent. Widening interest rate differentials are likely to be an increasing theme as we move into this year, because the pound was also stronger in here today by one almost 1.5 cents, and people are starting to bet on which countries are going to raise interest rates first, and most central banks have been procrastinating. They have been looking at their domestic growth stories, and they haven't been particularly convincing. And with the amount of debt that various governments have taken on, and with the fragility of the various banking sectors, they haven't seen enough of the inflationary pressures in their own economies to really justify raising interest rates. But that's certainly beginning to change. Commodity price inflation is a very real factor, and 2010 was a terrible year for global agriculture. The increasing amount of unrest that we have in the Middle East is helping to support oil prices. But more to the point, a global economy is back on a growth trajectory. It's being led higher by Asia and commodity-producing Latin America, and the economies that are most leveraged to global growth have been doing very well indeed. And the UK has been battling with inflationary pressures that are above target for a while now. The UK manufacturing centre is doing very well indeed, and the pound, well, the UK was fortunate that it was able to get its devaluation in early, and the pound has begun to recover against particularly some of the weaker currencies, such as, or the perhaps the better way of putting it is the It's been performing better against currencies that are less likely to raise interest rates in a hurry. So certainly those are the dollar and the yen. We continue to see that inflationary pressures aren't about to just disappear. And Asian markets have been slow to raise interest rates. India has probably been ahead of the curve in that respect, and probably has also had one of the bigger inflationary problems. But countries such as Indonesia haven't yet begun to raise interest rates, and they're behind the curve at this point. So 2011 is likely to be a year in which more countries begin to raise interest rates, and a number that already have will begin to put them even higher. And that's going to widen out interest rate differentials. And whereas there's a large debate going on as to whether the UK or the Eurozone or the USA would be raising interest rates this year, I don't think there's anybody expecting Japan to raise interest rates. And the yen in particular has done extraordinarily well over the last couple of years, as the benefit of owning other currencies relative to the yen has disappeared. But as those interest rate differentials start to widen out again, well, the yen is at a very strong point relative to a good number of currencies at this point. And if one is looking for a viable carry trade currency, then the yen certainly fits into that category, because it's more likely to weaken than strengthen from its current position against a range of currencies. And it's got really quite low interest rates, and in absolute as well as relative terms. And there are plenty of higher yielding potential assets, or investment destinations out there. And those are the three different criteria that need to be met for a viable carry trade. So the potential for carry trades to get put on over the next year is really quite high, I suspect, and that could help to continue to fuel the demand for higher yielding or strongly performing assets, which have been bracketed into risk assets over the last couple of years. The shock that we've had from the surge in oil prices has abated somewhat, but it doesn't derail the fact that most North American and Northern European stock market indices have become overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. So while they've certainly steadied, the likelihood that we're moving into a reversionary process, which in a best-case scenario will allow them to range and allow their 200-day moving average to catch up with them, I think it's probably increased. Whereas when one looks at a number of the Asian markets, they've been in a reversionary process since last November, and they've already completed those reversions to their 200-day moving averages. They're beginning to find support, and they're probably a less risky prospect from from an investment perspective at this particular juncture. Whereas the oil problem was a threat of or a potential threat to supply, the bad yields that we've had right across the agricultural sector over the last year are not just a potential supply threat, they're an actual supply threat. So corn in particular has a remarkably consistent uptrend, and last week's advance and decline in advance in that order have left it with an equal sized reaction relative to others that it's had in the course of its medium term uptrend, which means that it's still a consistent advance. And while somewhat overextended relative to the 200-day moving average, the reaction we've seen to date hasn't been enough to derail the uptrend. And it's a pretty similar story for things like the Nasdaq and the Dow Jones. Last week's reaction was relatively similar sized to those that we've seen previously. And they'll need larger reactions to really begin to indicate to investors that something has changed, because last week's reaction has probably not really hit very many investment stops. With the risk assets doing a bit better in the last couple of days, some of the impetus has come out of the government bond market, and US Treasuries now are at 120 and a bit at 9:30 seconds. They had rallied really quite impressively over the last couple of weeks, and they'll need to break out of that little short-term range underneath the 122 area to indicate that US Treasuries have hit a bottom of medium-term significance. And while they were a bit overextended when they begun that range relative to the 200-day moving average, that's almost been completely unwound. So the potential upside for Treasuries is largely dependent on an intensification of the Middle Eastern crisis. And at the moment, that isn't looking like an immediate prospect, although it's certainly a potential prospect. But what's happening in the Middle East is highlights perfectly the failure of some regimes to cater for much larger populations, and particularly relative to some of those that are doing quite an acceptable job of growing their economies fast enough that they can create jobs for masses of new young people. Because the global economy has exploded, or the global population has exploded in the last 30 years, and a large number of countries have a huge percentage of their population under the age of 30. Those young people are entering the workforce. They've needed education. A lot of them still need education, but they need jobs, shelter, prospects. They need to believe that their lives are going to be better, that the middle class standard of living that they aspire to is a realistic aspiration. And a lot of the disquiet that has emerged in the Middle East over the last couple of months has to do with higher food prices. And those higher food prices are a symptom of the lack of economic and governance that has just not taken account of the potential that you're going to have so many people entering the workforce and have nothing for them to do. So the countries that are going to do best are the ones that maximize their demographic dividend. And right now, those countries are almost entirely focused in Asia and in commodity producing Latin America. And that's where the focus of global growth is. That's where some of the best economic governance is now to be observed. And that is where some of the best investment returns are likely to continue to be over the medium to longer term. And I think with that, I'll leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.